Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 25 event, which takes place in Long Island, New York. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 3.83 units for UFC Fight Night 113 after going 2-0 on our premium bets. We also lost our one-unit free bet. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 25 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Frankie Perez, who is 10-3, and Chris Wade, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Wade, minus 230, the comeback on Perez at plus 170. Looking over to our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Make sure you guys check those guys out. Currently at Five Dimes, it looks like we have Wade at minus 300, the comeback on Perez at plus 250. So a little bit more action coming in Wade's way. I understand it. I mean, he is the more popular fighter of the two. I think a lot of people have respect for his overall game. Of course, this is also a rematch dating back a few years ago when they fought in another organization before they both made the UFC, where they had a split decision, a very competitive type of fight. So these guys have history together, but the respect factor, especially in the UFC, has definitely gone more towards Wade because he's had a lot of success. I mean, let's face it. He's put together some nice quality wins in the UFC. And then, of course, unfortunately for him, he suffered a couple back-to-back losses, but look at the competition level of those losses. I mean, he basically faced better grapplers. I mean, the Russians that beat him recently will be most lightweights in this weight class. So it's not bad losses for Wade, and this is actually a step down in competition for him going against Perez. Now, that's not disrespecting Perez either because he's going to be game, and he's definitely going to be in this fight, and he's going to make it competitive. I think Perez actually has a little bit of advantage on the feet, actually. I mean, Wade isn't going to be out of his element there, especially his kicking game. He can score and land well with kicks. His fight IQ is decent enough where he'll be in the game when it comes to striking as well. But I just think Perez has a little bit more length on the feet. I like his boxing. I think he can land some kicks of his own as well. His clinch works decent. So I give the slight edge to Perez on the feet. I think the grappling will go Wade's way, and then the conditioning goes Wade's way as well. So I think that's basically what it comes down to. Early on, we're going to see ultra-competitive fight. Perez might even steal the first round. But as we get in round two and round three, I think it's going to get a little bit more clear, and we're going to see Wade pulling away with a fight and winning a competitive close decision. So I'm going to pick Wade to defeat Perez more than likely by unanimous decision, a competitive unanimous decision. Now, could see a finish late, maybe in round three, if Wade is able to catch Perez's back or something of that nature. But I think more than likely it's a decision win for Wade.
And I'm on a similar wavelength here. Frankie Perez has showcased some decent striking in his UFC run. I mean, the knockout of Sam Stout was impressive right before his retirement. And then in his last fight, he showcased some decent top control in wrestling against Dia Casey. But this time he's taken on somebody in Chris Wade. Again, they fought before, but he's facing somebody in Chris Wade who has a better ground game, has better conditioning. And while Chris Wade has had some trouble in his last two fights, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt here because he was facing Makhachev, he was facing Khabalov, two really, really nasty Russian ground fighters. So Wade, yeah, he got on the losing end of those bouts, but Frankie Perez is no Makhachev. He is no Rustam Khabalov. So what I see happening here is maybe Perez lands the better shots on the feet, but Wade holds his own there. And then when it goes to the floor, while Perez has some wrestling, Wade is the better wrestler. Wade is better with top control. Wade is going to threaten with submissions a little bit more. So I just see Wade winning a decision as well. So my pick is going to be Chris Wade. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Shane Burgos, who is 9-0, taking on Godofredo Pepe, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, What's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Burgos, minus 300, the comeback on Pepe at plus 220. Right now it's Burgos minus 340, the comeback on Pepe at plus 280. So straight bets coming in Burgos' way. I was expecting some of that as well, especially some parlay action. I mean, Burgos is just a popular fighter right now. And Pepe, he gets some respect at the betting window for sure throughout his UFC career. But right now it seems like Burgos seems to be the guy that everybody's kind of keeping an eye out on the featherweight division as far as up-and-coming fighters. I mean, he's 26 years old. The guy is an ultra-talented fighter, of course. And he's made a splash thus far in the UFC with his performances. There's no question about that. I mean, defeating Rosa, knocking him out. Rosa's a pretty tough guy. And to be able to finish him like he did in that third round, and especially the way he looks leading up to that point, I mean, he was landing some serious punishment. Again, his takedown defense is good. He's just every aspect of Burgos' game is spot on, and it looks like he really has no true weakness. Minus at times, I mean, other strikers might be able to have some success. His strike defense needs to tighten up a little bit better. He was absorbing some punishment against Pepe, or I'm sorry, against Rosa, I should say, in that last fight a little bit, but his chin held up fine. So he has a solid chin as well. So Burgos is a very complete fighter, and he's got the punching power and the will to win, the pressure that he puts on his opponents. A lot of people cannot withstand that kind of pressure. Pepe, again, very talented fighter. I think overall in the UFC, he's almost overachieved a little bit because he's more known for his ground fighting. And on the ground, the guy's definitely talented. He has a sneaky good sub game, whether it's off his back or from the top. I mean, the guy is definitely a very talented submission artist, and there's no question about that. He's also made himself a little bit more dangerous on the feet with his unorthodox and aggressive, wild kind of style on the feet. I mean, he ended fights with a flying knee, for crying out loud, that's knocked people out. So Pepe's dangerous regardless of where the fight takes place because of his aggression, because of his carefree kind of attitude and style. Now, will that play in well against Burgos? I'm not sure. I think that probably gets him knocked out. I mean, if any kryptonite in Pepe's game, it's been just that. I mean, if people can take him down and out-wrestle him and kind of avoid the submission, they can beat him that way. But more so than that, I think Pepe's biggest issue is that chin. He's been rocked before. He's been knocked out before. And against Burgos, that hits as hard as he does, that puts that kind of pressure moving forward that he does, I think it's just a bad combination for Pepe. So expecting some early fireworks, but I think when the smoke clears, it's going to be Burgos knocking out Pepe and catching that chin of Pepe. So I understand the early action coming in Burgos' way, and I understand why the sports books are pushing that lineup a little bit more, as they should. I think Burgos comes away with a win here and is probably going to be by knockout.
Pepe is the type of fighter that either wins big or he loses huge. And this is the type of fight that I have a really bad feeling about him. Shane Burgos has showcased a really good chin. Burgos has showcased good power. He's showcased a good pace. He's showcased good conditioning. And basically, Pepe, I mean, this is a guy that can get quick submissions. He can get, like, crazy flying knee attacks and get, like, jumping knockouts. But, man, I really don't think Pepe can pull this off. I mean, Pepe is going to be undersized here. I mean, usually he's the longer, lankier fighter, but he's given up 4 inches in height. He's given up 2 inches in reach. I just think Shane Burgos just gets in his face, pressures the hell out of him, and then Pepe just wilts under that pressure. We've seen Pepe have serious trouble when people get in top position against him, and Burgos could do that. He has good wrestling to fall back on if he needs it. And, Pepe has gotten himself in trouble when, he eats some huge shots on the feet too. So I just really like Shane Burgos here. I mean, he's fighting in his hometown. He's a Tiger Schulman guy. And I think they're setting this up for, a New York guy to get a quality win here. And I think Shane Burgos is a definite talent on the rise. And I think that he doesn't just win here, but he probably gets a stoppage in the first round or two. Now moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Timothy Johnson, who is 11-3, taking on UFC newcomer Junior Albini, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Johnson, minus 245, the comeback on Albini at plus 175. Right now looking over 5 dimes. It is actually Johnson minus 235, the comeback on Albini plus 195. So line margins tighten up. Not a lot of action coming on this fight either way. It would be the type of fight I think we do end up getting a little bit of two-way action. Johnson's one of those guys that a lot of people aren't going to go crazy at the betting window for. You know, I mean, he's just one of those guys. It's not the flashiest fighter. He's just a hard-nosed, gritty fighter that is talented and gets a job done. It's just not really flashy when he does so. I mean, he's more of your grinding style fighter. He has good work in the clinch, of course. His aggression, pinning people up against the cage, getting some takedowns, good ground and pound. So he's just your, like I said, your average grinder that's in the heavyweight division can definitely find success because he's got the toughness to do so as well. So that's going to be his path to victory against Albini as well in this matchup. Albini, I was pretty impressed with him as I was looking through the footage. I mean, this isn't going to be his official UFC debut, but if you watch some of his previous fights, you could definitely tell the guy has some talent. I mean, really, he's well-rounded with his skill set. He seems to prefer the stand and bang type of fight, like meaning his striking is the best part of his game overall because he has some knockout power. He mixes in his combinations well. He pushes forward. He stays calm in the pocket. I mean, his counter-punching ability is really good. So with space, Albini could be a very successful heavyweight striker. No question about that. His ground game, he shows decent takedown defense at times as well. It's not like you could just, you know, rush in and get this guy to the floor. So he does have takedown defense, and he does have a capable takedown game in his own right where he can get top position, drop some ground and pound. He can win by submission on the ground as well. So again, well-rounded skill set. The problem with Albini that I saw as you were digging through the footage, his last fight bothered me a little bit. He did come away with a win, but his opponent was able to bull rush him and put him against a cage often, and Albini just kind of settled for that position. I think that's going to be his problem here against Johnson. Johnson has a clear path to victory if he does that. If Albini has not gotten to the point where he's worked on that and by reversing position against the cage and getting his back off the cage and creating more space when he needs to, Johnson's going to win this fight like he basically always does. The blueprint's right there for him, and that's the kind of style he fights. So this is kind of a head-scratcher for me matchup-wise because I really do think if Albini can create the space, he can beat Johnson. But I just don't think it's going to happen. I think Johnson is going to bull rush him. I think Johnson is going to be able to control the tempo of this fight and where the fight takes place. So I think he's going to grind out another close type of competitive, maybe boring type of decision, unfortunately. So I think the line's about right where it's at right now. I mean, it should be a little bit closer, but again, the grinding style of Johnson is why it's where it's at right now, and I think people are kind of staying away from it either way. So I would like to see Albini in his next fight, whether he wins or loses this. Hopefully he gets matched up with another striker because I think we can see some fireworks in his next possible fight if they match him right. But in this fight, I think it's kind of going to be an ugly fight, and I think Johnson gets by with a narrow, but at the same time, I think kind of clear type of decision.
Seems like Johnson's the guy that the UFC has been throwing in a lot of their debuting fighters against. I mean, Shamil Abdurakhimov had a rough go of it against Johnson in his UFC debut. Marcin Tybura had trouble against Johnson in his UFC debut, and Tybura's turned out to be a pretty good heavyweight. I mean, same with Abdurakhimov. And then Alexander Volkov had to face him in his UFC debut, I believe. So, and that was a really close, ugly fight. And then now Junior Albini is facing him in his UFC debut. And Albini is a really intriguing prospect. I mean, watching him fight, I mean, this guy takes people out quick. He has heavy hands. He has pretty good striking fundamentals. But his big concern for me is the defensive grappling. I mean, he had a really ugly fight in his last fight before making this UFC debut, and Timothy Johnson is a guy that can make fights ugly in a hurry. I mean, Johnson has pretty good wrestling. He has the ability to shove you around the, hold you against the fence, and then he also, even when that's not working, he pushes a decent tempo on the feet. I mean, Marcin Tybura basically lost the striking battle against Johnson because Johnson just got in his grill. If Albini has trouble dealing with just a lot of offensive pressure, if he, you know, doesn't like getting smothered a little bit and crowded, then that could affect him as well. So while I do think that Albini is a good prospect and he has a bright future in the UFC, I just don't like this matchup. I think Johnson crowds him. I think Johnson pressures him. I think Johnson can take him down. I think Johnson can push him in the fence. And that'll basically eventually help Johnson win a unanimous decision against Albini. So my pick is going to be Timothy Johnson. Now, dropping all the way down to the bantamweight division, we have Brian Kelleher, who is 17-7, taking on Marlon Vera, who is 9-3-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Kelleher, minus 190, the comeback on Vera at plus 150. Right now, over at Five Dimes, it's Kelleher minus 235, the comeback on Vera plus 195. My, what a nice solid win can do for you. I mean, a decent underdog has in his UFC debut against Alcaterra. Now he's a decent favorite over Vera. Now I understand Alcaterra gets a lot more respect than Vera does, so don't get me wrong, but still good to see Kelleher come in here, get his shot in the UFC. He's been a savvy veteran for a long time trying to get his shot in the UFC. He had success, pulls off an upset win, and now he's here, and now he's favored, and now everybody realizes what kind of fighter he is, really. If you look at his record, 17-7, I mean, not overly impressive. Now, it's not a bad record, and especially in MMA, as we all know, because a lot of good fighters out there have taken several losses on their resume. But it's Kelleher's recent run that's been really fantastic to watch. I mean, he's one of those savvy vets, again, that I've said time and time again, that has come into their own, that have basically figured out the game to the point where they know what they're successful at, and they implement that style once they get into the cage. And for Kelleher, it's definitely his grappling aspect. I mean, the guy is a grinder. The guy is a submission artist that finishes most people. I mean, he gets around your neck, forget it. Look how quick he latched onto Alcaterra's neck, and Alcaterra could do nothing about it. I mean, it was over that quick before you even realized what happened. So that's the kind of fighter Kelleher is, and he's actually getting a bit of a step down in competition. Not to take anything away from Vera, because I do think Vera is getting better, and since the Ultimate Fighter, he's actually – his cardio has improved. His IQ has improved. I think his striking and grappling, everything, all aspects of Vera's game has really improved. And typically speaking, I mean, Vera does get some betting support from the public as well out there. I mean, it's not like this guy's, you know, going to be a huge underdog. It depends, obviously, who he's matched up against. But I'm saying he gets a fair amount of respect and recognition, especially from where he kind of came from in his background. So Vera is a talented fighter, and he's still young enough at age 24, I believe, where he's going to keep on improving. So just unfortunately for him, I'm not sure how he's going to beat Kelleher. I think he's going to need to basically keep this fight upright and Kelleher on the feet, meaning whether he's going to land kicks, land, you know, some solid punches along the way and try to hurt and do damage against Kelleher. But Kelleher's a savvy vet. He's been in there with a lot of decent fighters throughout his career, people that have been able to outstrike him, and he survived okay as well. So Vera could also possibly submit Kelleher on the ground. I know that's not out of the question. Kelleher has 4 submission losses on his resume. Now, if you look back again, most of those losses were a little bit earlier in his career. One is fairly recent, but if you watch that fight and how he got caught, you're going to understand that a lot of people would have got caught in that submission as well. So it was just a tough spot he got himself into there. So Vera could possibly pull off the upset in a situation like that as well. I just don't think it's as logical in this spot here. I think Kelleher will continue to win in the UFC and put on a nice little run here. I mean, this will be a second fight, so I'm expecting him to go 2-0 and get a solid quality win over a guy like Vera. So I think it's a submission game that gets it done, even though Vera has never officially been submitted in his pro career as of yet. There's a first time for everything, and if anybody could do it, anybody catch that neck and sub him, it's a guy like Kelleher. So I think it's Kelleher's fight to win or lose. I think he can grind Vera out and win on the scorecards. If he doesn't do that, I think there's a good chance he wins by submission here as well. So the pick is Kelleher to win. I understand the early action coming in his way. I do agree with it.
Kelleher made one hell of a UFC debut, getting a finish of Yuri Alcantara, something that nobody had ever been able to do before, not even Uriah Faber. So with his fight here, I mean, this is just a monster step down in competition. And I'm not trying to, like, trash talk Marlon Vera. It's just he's not even close to the level of Yuri Alcantara in terms of fighter skill. He doesn't have Alcantara's power. He doesn't have Alcantara's grappling ability. I mean, he doesn't have his experience. I mean, it's just not even close. So basically, Kelleher, as long as he doesn't fight down to the level of his competition, he should be in really good shape here. Vera is a decent striker. He's got developing power. He's okay off of his back with submissions, but his big issue is he does get taken down. I mean, when he faced Davy Grant, I mean, he just got worked over in that fight. Just a very one-sided beating. And his last fight against Brad Pickett, I mean, it was a close fight, but Pickett was getting takedowns. He was in top control. And he was, I thought, in my opinion, winning that fight up until Vera landed a head kick and put him out late in the third round. So Vera still has those issues with the defensive grappling. So I see Kelleher getting this fight to the ground and just not giving it up from that point. I can see him getting a submission for sure. And one thing to be a little concerned about is Kelleher has been submitted several times in the past, mainly earlier in his career. And Vera has pulled off a triangle choke off of his back in his first career win in the UFC. So that is something to consider. But overall, I definitely favor Kelleher here. Vera should have the edge on the feet, but when this goes to the ground, it's going to be Kelleher's world. So I like Kelleher. I think he at least wins a decision, but has a good chance of submitting Marlon Vera. Now moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims. In the featherweight division, we have Kyle Bochniak, who is 7-1, taking on Jeremy Kennedy, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Kennedy, -245, the comeback on Bochniak at +175. Another spot where it's basically stayed the same. It's right now Kennedy -245, the comeback on Bochniak is at +205. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming in this fight as well. A little bit more parlay love coming in Kennedy's way as expected, but nothing significantly that it's caused a big stir in the line move or anything like that. So both guys getting respect, both guys prospects. I mean, let's face it. Obviously, Kennedy is the bigger prospect. I mean, he's younger. He's only 24 years old, where Bochniak is at age 30. So he's more into the prime of his career as far as, his age goes, but still fairly new. I mean, he's only 7-1 throughout his career, and Bochniak is improving and the type of fighter that has a tremendous skill set overall. And I think is a great addition to the UFC roster. And so far he's had some decent performances. I mean, some questionable ones as well, meaning that, his Barzola win, a lot of people thought that it could have been a loss, and I understand it was close enough where you could have gave the nod to Barzola, and I think most people would agree with that. His Rosa win, or his loss, I should say, against Rosa in his debut was a tough fight. I mean, he took that fight on short notice, and he hung in there with Rosa, which Rosa is a solid guy in the featherweight division as well, as we know that. So, acceptable loss. Controversial type of win for Bochniak, but the point being, you can see the skill that the guy has. He has really good boxing. He's got some power in the feet. He has capable wrestling. He's got capable takedown defense, and he's got a little bit of submission game to go along with it. So another guy that's ultra well-rounded, that's getting better fight by fight, that's getting more confidence fight by fight, and I think he's going to give Kennedy all he can handle in this fight. In fact, I know there's been a war of words on Twitter from both these guys back and forth. They've been going at it pretty good, and Kennedy's kind of disrespecting Bochniak in a way, where saying, hey, you're not on my level. It's going to be easy work and that sort of thing from what I read. So it's interesting because I do think it's going to be a very, very competitive fight. But Kennedy has been more of the impressor of the two for sure. I mean, if you look at his fight, his last fight really against Honey Jason, I mean, to be able to control the tempo of that fight in hostile territory as well and just do what he did. I mean, it was more than impressive, I think, because Honey Jason is very dangerous. Even if you put him on his back, he can submit you. On the feet, obviously, he's dangerous as well. So Kennedy went in and did what he had to do. He outgrinded him. He fought smart. He controlled the tempo of the fight, and he got the biggest win of his career. And I think that Bochniak is going to be a little bit less dangerous in a lot of ways than Honey Jason was for Kennedy as well. But is he going to be able to control the wrestling aspect as well as he did against Jason? I don't know. I think Bochniak does have better takedown defense overall, and it's not going to be as easy. But the pressure that Kennedy pushes and the pace that he sets, I think he's going to be able to pin Bochniak against the cage. He's going to be able to slow the fight down a little bit and kind of start grinding on Bochniak along the way. And I think that's probably going to get him the decision win here as well. That's why he's a solid favorite. I think when it takes place on the feet and these guys are striking back and forth, it'll be competitive. I think Bochniak obviously has to make up a little bit of distance and height. I mean, the reach is almost similar. Kennedy, I believe, is only 1 inch, but obviously he's a shorter fighter. So Bochniak is going to have to try to work inside a little bit more. Kennedy's going to have to kind of use that length and keep him on the outside and have success there. So I think both guys can have success in the striking range, but I think what it comes down to is Kennedy putting everything together a little bit more. I trust Kennedy a little bit more as well. Obviously people do out there that are betting him. And I think that he probably comes away with a close competitive win. It's just a weird spot for me. That's why I'm kind of, I guess, not as confident as you like to see in a guy like Kennedy, because with his skill set definitely being what it is, because I think Bochniak is one of those guys that improved so much fight by fight. Now he's been out for almost a year as well. I think he's had time to work on his game and make more improvements. So I'm expecting this to be a lot closer than probably all of us think. That's why I'm kind of spinning all this out here. But that being said, I still favor Kennedy, and I think he does get the edge in this fight. He wins a close, close decision against Bochniak.
And personally, I don't think this fight will be as close as Nick thinks it'll be. Now, Bochniak has put up some good fights so far in his UFC career. I mean, he gave Rosa all he could get in his UFC debut on short notice in a losing effort. And then in his second fight, he won a split decision over Barzola. And honestly, I thought Barzola won that fight. But, I mean, it was a close fight, relatively. But I just thought he got outworked. And then now he's taken on Jeremy Kennedy. And Kennedy, to me, is the best Canadian prospect in the UFC, and I don't even think it's that close. Kennedy is undefeated right now, and he has looked just really, really rock solid. I mean, UFC debut, he took on relatively short notice, a weight class up, and he won a decision using basically a grinding style, pushing the fight into the fence, getting takedowns, and then dropped back down to his natural featherweight division, and he was just sensational in his last fight. It was a really solid performance. And Kennedy is just a really good, well-rounded fighter. He has strong wrestling. He has good fundamentals on the feet, and he puts good pressure on his opponents. And Bochniak, to me, I don't think that he'll be able to handle the pressure and pace of Jeremy Kennedy. And I expect Jeremy Kennedy to be getting a ton of takedowns here. And, I expect Kennedy or Bochniak to be on his back and to stay on his back for extended periods of time. So, I really like Jeremy Kennedy and I expect that he'll win. So my pick is going to be Jeremy Kennedy. Now moving on to the preliminary card on Fox. We have a heavyweight contest between Damian Grabowski, who is 20-4, and Chase Sherman, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Sherman -230, the comeback on Grabowski at +170. Right now, over at 5 Dimes, Sherman -235, Grabowski +195. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, basically staying where it's at. Not a lot of two-way action in this fight either. I think a lot of people cannot really truly support either guy because there's a lot of question marks and a lot of concern surrounding both. Hey, first of all, you got to take your hat off to Sherman. His Twitter game is strong and on point, man. I'll tell you what, he's really making, building, solidifying a nice little fan base for himself. I mean, through Twitter, so through social media. So you got to give him credit for that. I mean, the guy is definitely somebody you want to keep an eye out on Twitter. He's just funny, you know, just everything about that aspect. The social media game he has on point. But getting into this fight, he's taking this fight on short notice and he's coming in as a 2-1 favorite. And this is the guy that was started off his UFC career 0-2 and he was looking to keep his job and survive in his last fight. And he did just that. I mean, that fight was definitely impressive and he came away with the win. He got fight of the night, or I believe, or performance of the night bonus, if I'm not mistaken. So he got a fight bonus for that, which is deservingly so. I mean, it was a war that he had against Coulter as well. So a lot of the good things I like about Sherman. Grabowski, on the other hand, man, I feel so bad for the guy. I mean, he's a type of savvy veteran that's been around for a long time as well, that's had a lot of success, faced decent competition outside of the UFC, finally makes it to the UFC, and bam, he gets knocked out by Derek Lewis, and he gets knocked out by Anthony Hamilton. So back-to-back knockout losses, and now he's facing a guy that's going to look to knock him out again. I mean, that's how Sherman wins his fight. So Grabowski is way better than being 0-2 in the UFC, but unfortunately for him at age 37 and coming off two back-to-back knockout losses, I had to set him as a decent dog here because skill-wise, I mean, Grabowski probably is the more talented fighter of the two, but Sherman's going to be a little bit bigger. Obviously, I think he hits a little bit harder, and I think this fight probably stays up because I don't think Grabowski can get him on the floor, and if he doesn't, I would suspect that Sherman lands one eventually and puts that chin of Grabowski's out. So again, it's unfortunately for Grabowski, unfortunate because I do think he's better than what he's showing thus far in his career, but it looks like he's going to go 0-3 and probably out the door in the UFC. And again, for a guy, if you know, those of you guys that have kept up with his career throughout, there's no way you would suspect him to come into the UFC and just be out the door that quick. So it's unfortunate, like I said, but credit Sherman for probably getting a W here and making himself a player, at least. I was about to say, I don't want to say contender because he's not a contender by any means, but making himself a player, at least, in the heavyweight division, meaning that he's, again, that social media game's on point. He's building a fan base. And if he goes out there and delivers a couple knockouts, that's what people want to see. So he's doing some really good things, and he's making himself a person that the UFC can kind of get behind from time to time in the heavyweight division, at least. So credit Sherman. I think he does probably get the job done here against Grabowski, and it's probably going to be by knockout. So my pick is Sherman.
Yeah, Damian Grabowski just has not been the fighter I was expecting since he's signed with the UFC. I mean, granted, he's 37 years old, so maybe he's just starting to slow down. But, I mean, his chin has evaporated, and I mean, he's been in there twice, and he's been taken out quickly twice. I mean, Derek Lewis got on top of him and just pounded the hell out of him. But then in his last fight, he took on Anthony Hamilton, who is not exactly a world beater, and Hamilton just tore through him in like 15 seconds. I mean, it was embarrassing. So, I mean, I know Chase Sherman is not a great fighter. I mean, he went 0-2 in his first two fights and lost pretty decisively in both of them. And then in his last fight, Sherman, you know, he slowed down. It was a slop fest. His opponent was basically on one leg. And Sherman, I mean, he just really had a lot of trouble putting his opponent away. And eventually he did get the knockout late. But, man, that was not a great performance, even in victory. So, I mean, it's not exactly like Sherman has a huge edge here. The only thing that Sherman really has over Grabowski is he's shown that at least he can absorb some punishment a little bit. He can dish it out, and that he has what it takes to at least get a UFC win. But, I mean, if Grabowski can get Sherman down, I mean, he does have a good ground game. He might be able to get a submission, especially if Sherman starts to slow down late. But I just don't think Grabowski will be able to do that. I mean, Sherman has power. He has a little bit of technique on the feet, and he probably just catches Grabowski and finishes him with a knockout early, because that's just what's been happening with Grabowski so far. So my pick is going to be Chase Sherman. Now, dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Ryan LaFlair, who is 13-1. He's taking on Alex Oliveira, who is 16-3-1 with two no contests. Now, Nick, where'd you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in LaFlair -245, the comeback on Oliveira at +175. And right now it's LaFlair -175, the comeback on Oliveira is at +155. So needless to say, action coming in on Oliveira. Wasn't sure how the action would go here, especially since everybody was kind of counting out Oliveira in his last fight against Means, especially how that little mini series went between Tim Means and Oliveira. It was crazy, right? A lot of people saw what happened in their first brief fight where Tim Means was destroying Oliveira, and then Oliveira comes back and wins in that quick turnaround rematch that they had. So, and of course, Brian and I were on Oliveira in that fight as far as premium goes as well. So we saw the potential and the disrespect that everybody was giving Oliveira, and we were right. We cashed in on it, so that was a good win. But matchups are everything, and this matchup against LaFlair is a completely different one. So even though I backed Oliveira against Tim Means, it doesn't mean I would back him here in this spot against LaFlair. Now, LaFlair, I know, I don't want to say he's had his ups and downs, because he's only lost one fight in his career, and that was against Damian Maia. So, I mean, and we know what Damian Maia is doing his next fight. He's fighting for that title. So it's a respectable loss against the best grappler in the welterweight division. So not much to say there, but I mean, I wish he was fighting a little bit more consistent as of late for LaFlair. We get to see a little bit more from him, especially as he's 33 years old now. He's not an old man by any means, but, you know, he's not a young buck either. So LaFlair's game overall, I think, is what's going to be the difference here. I do think Oliveira's size, even though LaFlair is going to be a little bit taller than him, Oliveira has that physicality. Even though he did fight a lightweight, you know, coming up to 170, it hasn't been bad for him. He's still strong at 170, but the weight cut's obviously a little bit healthier for him. So his physicality is tough for many to deal with. And I think that, you know, it could be also a little bit tough for LaFlair. But the point being here is Oliveira makes a lot of mistakes. I mean, he has the striking ability to finish people on the feet. He has the submission ability to finish people on the ground. He's got the wrestling and the takedown ability to get the fight to the ground in most cases as well. But the problem with him is his fight IQ, his conditioning at times lets him down a little bit. And against a guy like LaFlair, you cannot afford to make mistakes. LaFlair knows what he's going after. He's typically your grinding type of fighter as well, where he gets the takedowns, gets you on the floor, and starts working his submission game, his grappling game, grinds you out. If he can get a sub, it's there. He'll take it. If he needs to drop ground and pound and just, you know, win the round that way, he will as well. On the feet, he's no slouch either. He definitely has good striking. His hands are okay. He has a good kicking game. So there's a lot to like about LaFleur that he can match Oliveira. But I think it's going to really come down to in this fight is, it'll be competitive. It'll be close. Oliveira might even be giving LaFleur some trouble early on. But as it goes, LaFleur is going to get his opportunities to get that W, meaning he might be able to get the fight to the ground and take Oliveira's back. And once he does, there's no question in my mind that LaFleur can submit and defeat Oliveira on the ground if that happens. If not, I think he can get positional control enough that he wins on the scorecards as well. So to me, it's LaFleur's fight to win or lose. If he can adapt as he's progressing, as the fight goes on a little bit, and adjust to the flaws or mistakes that Oliveira's making, he's going to capitalize and win this fight. So that's why I opened him over 2-1 favorite. And now that he's dipped under 2-1, I think anything under 2-1, there might possibly be a little bit of value on LaFleur, honestly, at the betting window. But it's tough. If he gets over that 2-1 hump, then of course you got to respect Oliveira, and it probably is not worth the play. But early action coming in on the dog, I disagree with it. I think it's LaFleur pass in this situation. So I'm going to pick LaFleur to win this fight.
I really like Ryan LaFleur here. Now, Alex Oliveira has pulled off some pretty impressive performances more recently against, you know, Tim Means, against Will Brooks. But Ryan LaFleur is a whole nother animal. I mean, Oliveira beat Brooks because he was just so much bigger than him. He was able to outmuscle him. Brooks had a lot of trouble with his wrestling. And then Brooks had like a rib injury, and that really took a lot out of his ability to get the fight to the ground. And this time around, I just think Ryan LaFleur has Oliveira beat in just about every facet of the fight. LaFleur pushes a higher pace on the feet. LaFleur has elite wrestling that he can get takedowns and not get submitted. I mean, this guy went 5 rounds with Damian Maia and had Maia on his back for like 4 of the rounds and did not get tapped out. So there's just no way Alex Oliveira gets a submission here. And LaFleur has shown good striking fundamentals, so I don't see Oliveira getting like a knockout unless he just lands a crazy lucky punch or something. I mean, LaFleur went in there against Santiago Ponzinibbio, a guy with way better striking than Oliveira, and had no issue dealing with Ponzinibbio on the feet, and then got a bunch of takedowns in that fight too. So I just see LaFleur pushing the pace on the feet, getting takedowns, and at worst winning a decision. Now, Cowboy Oliveira is a good fighter, but I just really don't think that he'll be able to handle what LaFleur brings here. So I see LaFleur winning a very one-sided decision. So my pick is going to be Ryan LaFleur. Now, moving up to the middleweight division, we have Rafael Natal, who is 21-8-1, taking on Eric Anders, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Anders -125, Natal -115. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it is Anders -115, Natal -105. Line margins have tightened up quite a bit. And there is two-way action on this fight. Not a tremendous amount of action on this fight either way. So line looks like it was appropriately set. And it was a tough one to set, honestly, because you got a guy in Anders that not a lot of the diehards really know too much about. I mean, if you're watching LFA or you're watching Access Fights, I should say, on Friday nights, you probably know about Anders. And if you're a football fan, he's an Alabama national champion, I believe, football player as well. So he was on the Bama team. And, I mean, the guy's just an athlete. The guy's a special type of athlete. And if you're watching, again, his fights, you're thinking to himself, can he convert and become a decent mixed martial artist? Well, the footage shows it all. He definitely can. The guy's a beast on the feet. The guy is a beast on the ground. He's a grinder. There's just all sorts of good things to like about Anders. I mean, his athleticism has really transitioned and carried over well into the MMA cage. I mean, the guy has decent conditioning. That's why I think even this short notice fight, I mean, he's taken this really short notice. He's in for DeChirico against Natal. And again, I opened him the slight favorite over a savvy, proven veteran in Natal. So that tells you how much I do respect Anders. And I think he's capable of getting the W here. And I think he probably does. Now, Natal overall, if you look at his skill set for skill set and track record wise, Natal's faced much better competition throughout his career and has success against a lot of them. I mean, Natal is no easy out. His striking is on point where he could be very dangerous on the feet. When he lets his hands and feet go, Natal can definitely be a knockout type of artist for sure. And on the ground, I mean, the guy has decent wrestling. He's not easy to take down and control on the ground as well. And he's got a submission game going along with it. So Natal excels at every area. It's just his conditioning and his chin that lets him down more times than not. And unfortunately for Natal, against a fighter like Anders, Anders is not going to have those weaknesses where he's not going to probably, his chin is good enough where Natal's going to struggle knocking him out early on. And as this fight progresses, it's Anders that's going to find, I think, the spot on the feet where he can possibly knock Natal out and finish him. If he doesn't, it's Anders that's going to find himself, I think, in top position as we go in round two or round three, or at least in control of the fight and pushing a higher pace as it goes. Now, again, that's a lot to be said, making your UFC debut against a solid vet like Natal, but I think Anders is ready for it, even on short notice, and he's probably going to get the job done. So my take is that Anders is going to come away with a very successful short notice UFC debut over a very proven veteran. So we'll see where he goes from here, but this is going to be probably a very solid win for Anders. So my pick is Anders to defeat Natal. I think there's a possibility that he gets the finish. If not, it'll be on probably the scorecards, a 29-28 type of decision win.
Anders is definitely a prospect to be excited about. My only issue is this is not an easy UFC debut to make. I mean, Rafael Natal was a guy that won like four or five fights in a row, was ranked in the top 15. He's beat some really nasty people like, you know, Uriah Hall, who is a very scary striker on the feet. So, you know, this is not going to be a walk in the park. This is a stiff test for Anders. Now, Anders is athletic, he's powerful, he's dangerous, but one good thing he's shown is he has pretty good conditioning. He went the distance in the RFA, and most of his fights, though, he gets quick finishes and quick knockouts. So I really, really like Anders. I think he's an extremely talented young man. So Natal is going to have his hands full. I mean, Anders... Natal has had a history of having chin issues. I mean, most recently he got knocked out by Tim Boach. So, I mean, if Anders connects with something really solid, Natal's going down and he's staying down. And I think that's honestly the most likely outcome of this fight. But I can also see Natal just slowly working over Anders by being a solid technical striker on the feet, maybe utilizing some of his ground game, maybe getting a takedown. And if he's able to do that, there's the possibility that Natal wins a decision here. I don't see Natal getting a stoppage, but there is, I think people might be overlooking Natal a little bit in terms of the betting odds. But overall, I mean, the hype behind Anders should be real. I mean, this guy is a scary, scary fighter, and he definitely has the potential to be a player in the middleweight division moving forward. So I'm going to pick Eric Anders, but I think if he wins this fight, it's probably going to be by knockout. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the welterweight division, we have Lyman Good, who is 19-3 with one no contest, taking on Elizu Zaleski dos Santos, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Good, -230, the comeback on Zaleski dos Santos at +170. Right now, looking over at five dimes, Good is -220. Dos Santos is at +180. So line margins have tightened up. Two action coming on this fight. Looks appropriately set. This is a tough fight. I mean, Zaleski dos Santos has definitely looked okay with his performances thus far. I know that, you know, there was some buzz around him making his UFC debut for sure, and then he suffered that loss to Dalby in a close but competitive type of decision. I mean, again, he took that fight, I believe, on short notice as well, so that had to factor in. Then he comes off of an impressive win over Akhmedov, but then, again, a little bit of a lackluster, but good performance against Nakamura, because Nakamura is one of those guys that flies under the radar, doesn't get a ton of respect, but is a very tough out. So Zaleski dos Santos coming off back-to-back solid wins, which gives him a little bit of momentum on his side. The guy has decent striking. He's got a decent ground game. Obviously, I mean, it tells you something right there with Nakamura in his last fight has a very good ground game. Usually if he gets your back or he gets you in trouble on the ground, he can finish the job. But Zaleski dos Santos was able to withstand all that, turn the tide, and obviously win that fight, which was a good, solid win, like I mentioned. Now, good, on the other hand, for him, he's been out for almost 2 years, so that's the biggest head-scratcher of this fight, in my opinion, because overall, I've been a fan of Goods. I think he's been underrated. I know he was a Bellator welterweight champion. He lost his crown to Ben Askren, so, you know, I mean, losing to Askren, getting out-wrestled in that fight, it's not a bad loss, obviously. And the just competition level that Goods faced throughout his career, the three losses that he has are against very good competition. And the wins that he has in his resume have been against solid competition as well. So that's why I'm so impressed with Good. Again, not a lot of people really jumping on his bandwagon or whatnot yet, especially at the betting windows, it seems. But I think that he is a very capable fighter. I mean, in most cases, he's going to out-wrestle his opponents. Now, again, a caliber wrestler like Ben Askren, no, that's not going to be the case. But against any other tier fighter in that regard, he can basically out-wrestle. So he can control and dictate the tempo of the fight in that regard. And then he can also outstrike his opponents. I think his striking is extremely underrated. I mean, the guy has power. He has clean technique. He has good fight IQ. He has good accuracy. So there's a lot of good things to like about Lyman Good, pardon the pun, but it's really true. I mean, he's a very solid fighter. And I think everything that I'm saying here is going to come into play because I do believe that he's the better fighter across the board. I think pure submission skill, maybe Dos Santos has a very slight edge, but I trust Lyman Good's submission defense a little bit more so than that too. So I think across the board, Good probably outstrikes Dos Santos. He's going to have to be wary about those kicks. Dos Santos does have a pretty impressive kicking game. Good's going to have to kind of be cautious about that. But on the feet, I think he pushes a high enough pace. He'll outpoint Dos Santos on the feet. And then on the ground, I think we're going to see Good in top position, avoiding the submissions and just kind of grinding out a win that way as well. So regardless of where the fight takes place, barring, I mean, a severe ring rust factor that Good being off 2 years shows, I think it's his fight to win or lose. And I'm expecting him to bounce back nicely, especially at welterweight, and get the W here. So Good is my choice. I think that I'm going to be looking forward to seeing more of his fights in the future after he gets a solid win here against Dos Santos. So the pick is Good.
Yeah, Lyman Good, Elizu Zaleski. This is a matchup that I really, really favor Good in. Basically, Good has a granite chin. He has solid boxing fundamentals, heavy hands, and he should be able to handle whatever Zaleski brings him. Zaleski doesn't really have very good takedowns, so Good should have no issue with keeping this fight upright. And while Zaleski does have a strong kicking game, I mean, Good entered the UFC in a middleweight fight and just steamrolled his opponent. So now he's dropping back down to welterweight where he cuts a ton of weight. And I know that it's been a while since he's competed, but I mean, this guy has so much talent, and I don't think this fight even lasts that long. I know that Zaleski is on a bit of a roll with a two-fight win streak, but I honestly, with Lyman Good fighting in New York, being a Tiger Schulman guy, with the crowd support, with the energy, I expect Lyman Good doesn't just win, but probably knocks Zaleski out. And I know Zaleski has he's pretty durable. He's got a bit of a well-roundedness to him, but I don't think he handles Lyman Good's power at all in this fight. And I think Good just gets on him and doesn't let up until this fight is finished. So my pick is going to be Lyman Good, and I think he wins by knockout. Now, moving on to the main card, we have a barn burner in the bantamweight division between Jimmy Rivera, who is 20-1, and Thomas Almeida, who is 21-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Rivera, minus 140, the comeback on Almeida at even money. Right now, over five times, it's minus 230 for Rivera. The comeback on Almeida is at plus 190. Wasn't really expecting all that. I mean, I get that Rivera is definitely the more trendy fighter right now. He's the more solid fighter. I mean, he's been impressive. Not to say Almeida has not. I mean, minus his guard rant loss, of course. But still, Almeida has been a pretty decent favorite in most of his fights overall. The guy is one of the most dangerous strikers on the feet in all of the bantamweight division. You cannot take that away from him. It's just, I guess what people are seeing here is Rivera, he's just a more complete fighter. I mean, there's no question about that. Where you look at Rivera, he can outstrike a lot of his opponents as well. He's got punching power on the feet. He's got speed to do so. He's got accuracy. So his striking is on point. Definitely has really good boxing with knockout power. His wrestling is on point as well. In most cases, he's able to get the fight down to the ground. He's able to control. He's able to do what he wants with his opponents on the ground, depending on the stylistic matchup, of course. And then, of course, he's got a little bit of subs to go along with it. So Rivera is a very, very complete fighter, and he excels. I mean, just the athleticism that he has with the speed and, again, his power and the way he puts everything together makes him what he is today and a serious contender at bantamweight. I mean, a lot of people were believing that the winner of this fight is definitely going to get himself in line for a future title shot. And the winner of this fight definitely earns that kind of respect. So I agree with it. But I think people are underestimating Almeida a little bit. And it's obvious to see why. It's that chin of his. I mean, he did get knocked out, as I mentioned, by Garbrandt. But beyond that, I mean, he's been rocked and he's been wobbled in many of his fights. And it's really his striking defense that is to blame for this. I mean, he has to tighten up that defense. His chin is a little bit suspect, to say the least, but in most cases he's been able to kind of bounce back relatively quickly and survive himself getting wobbled on the feet and then coming back and winning those fights. So Almeida's a warrior. I mean, that's all there is to it. And his striking offense is, again, something that you really can't compare to any other bantamweight in the UFC, with his length, with his unorthodox but clean striking technique. I mean, the timing that he has to go along with it. He's a very, very dangerous fighter. There's no way I'd be laying 2-1 or more over a guy like Almeida right now, even if his chin is a little bit suspect. And Rivera has the type of power that could finish him and put him out there like that. So I think people are really underestimating Almeida here, and I've been a big fan of Jimmy Rivera. I think the guy is worthy of getting a future title shot, and he's one of the best bantamweights in the world. But I can say the same thing about Almeida. I wish he did have better – tighter defense on the feet for sure, and that chin could held up a little bit more. But with all that being said, I think this is going to be a firefight. I think this is going to be fireworks. I think Rivera is going to struggle taking Almeida down. Even if he gets him down, I don't think he's going to be able to hold him down. So Almeida on the feet with that length and with his knockout power and potential that he has over in most fights, you know, over his opponents, with the timing that he has on his knees, everything, he's a dangerous, dangerous opponent. So I'm not confidently picking Rivera in this fight, but I will slightly lean his way. I think my opening number was a little bit more accurate than what's out there right now. So it's very slight edge to Rivera. So that's the way I'm going to go. But this is another one of those cases that you guys have to check out our MMAoddsbreaker.com stat picks that's posted usually, you know, by fight day or whatnot. It'll be a few hours before fight, maybe even the night before, depending on how early we get it out there. But check out the MMA Odds Breaker stat picks, because after weigh-ins, I could possibly flip to Almeida. We'll see how that plays out. We'll see how the weight cut goes for both gentlemen. But right now, it's a very, very slight lean for me towards Rivera. This is definitely one of the fights that I'm looking forward to the most. I'm sure most of you guys are out there as well. So hopefully it's just a fun fight, but the pick is Rivera.
Yeah, this fight honestly could go either way. I mean, Jimmy Rivera has been a sensation in his UFC run so far. I mean, the guy just stepped in and immediately made a huge impact, and he's picked up quality wins over some of the best guys in the division. I mean, beating Uriah Faber, basically sending him on his way out, was amazing, but he hasn't fought since then, so that is a bit of a concern. But the wins over Yuri Alcantara, a really quality win over Pedro Munhoz in one of the more entertaining fights you'll ever see. So, I mean, this guy goes in there and he has great, great performances. I mean, Thomas Almeida, on the other hand, he is one of the scariest strikers that the bantamweight division has ever seen. I mean, he has power in both hands. He is unorthodox. He has a very diverse skill set, throws crazy kicks and knees, and spinning attacks. So Rivera's going to have his hands full for sure. But as Nick mentioned, the biggest difference between these guys is striking defense and chin. Thomas Almeida, his biggest issue is he just can't take a good punch. Brad Pickett had him in a world of hurt. I mean, he's been hurt outside the UFC, and then obviously Cody Garbrandt ended his undefeated streak with just a vicious first round knockout. So if Rivera can land something significant, then Almeida's going down. Almeida has been working a little bit on his striking defense, but I mean, there's only so much you can do, especially in an elite matchup like this. Rivera also does have a good wrestling background. So say the striking isn't going his way, he can fall back on that. Although Almeida has thwarted just about everybody's takedown attempts thus far, and then he does get back up pretty quickly, even when taken down. So, I like this matchup. I mean, honestly, I think the line has been pushed a little bit too far in Rivera's favor, even though Rivera is going to be the New York kid, and we'll have the crowd behind him. I expect Rivera to win, but, I mean, I would not be shocked one bit if Thomas Almeida knocks him out or wins a decision just by outworking him, because Almeida does push a little bit of a higher pace, which is crazy because, I mean, Rivera lands almost five strikes a minute, and Almeida lands basically two more strikes a minute than him. So this should be a barn burner for however long it lasts, but I'm going to side with the guy that's a little bit more well-rounded, and that's going to be Jimmy Rivera. Now, moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Patrick Cummins, who is 9-4, and he's taken on Gian Vellante, who is 15-7. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Vellante -150 to come back on Cummins at +110. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Vellante -125 to come back on Cummins at +105. So 5 cent drop on the dog. Really, line margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two-way action on this fight. Early on, line flipped. Cummins was a little bit of a favorite after the line got posted. And now we're starting to see action back on Vellante as well. I opened Vellante the favorite. Let's just face it. It is what it is. You can't really trust either one of these guys too much, can you? I mean, Cummins has a terrible chin, one of the worst chins in the light heavyweight division. And Vellante has terrible fight IQ and cardio. So both these guys piss me off, really, when you think about it. I mean, they are both are ultra talented and have the skill set and athleticism to really be title contenders. I mean, look at Cummins. He's a world-class wrestler, especially in the cage. I mean, his wrestling could be really effective. If he had a chin on him, I mean, he could really make a run towards that light heavyweight title. There's no doubt about it. But unfortunately for him, he just doesn't have that chin. I mean, guys that have been able to keep off their back or spend some time on the feet with them and coming struggle to get it back to the floor have knocked him out. Look at OSP, knocked him out. Look at Glover Teixeira, knocked him out. Look at Nog, knocked him out. I mean, it's the guys that he's able to take down and control and drop some ground and pound and have his way with them on the ground that typically he has success against. Vellante has really good takedown defense, and that's why I opened him the favorite, because I think Vellante on the feet is the better striker overall. It's going to be close. Don't get me wrong. Vellante gets hit way too much, but his chin is a little bit more durable. And I'm saying that Vellante's been knocked out four times himself in his career. So his chin is more durable, but his gas, his cardio, his conditioning makes that chin a lot more suspect as the fight progresses a little bit. So that's what gets him in trouble here. But I don't think he's going to have to worry about that too much. I think what's going to happen here is this takedown defense for Vellante is going to come through. I think these guys are going to be exchanging on the feet. And I think more times than not, Vellante is going to land that finishing blow on the feet before it gets too far. So that's what I think happens. I think Vellante's wrestling defense, his takedown defense is going to come into play here. And I think his striking ability and his power on the feet is going to catch that chin of Cummins again and put him out. So that's why he's favored. I think that's why he should be the rightful favorite in this fight. And I think that's why he's going to probably win the fight. So unfortunately for Cummins, that chin's going to let him down again. And Vellante is going to stick around in the UFC because he gets another win over a guy that he really should beat, depending on the matchup. And this is exactly the type of matchup he can win. So Vellante's the pick.
It's really tough to trust either of these guys, as Nick mentioned, with neither guy having a very good chin, although Cummins' chin is just atrocious. I mean, it doesn't even take much at all for him to get in big trouble. I mean, ever since the UFC debut, when he entered on short notice against Daniel Cormier talking all that smack, and then Cormier just landed one good shot on the feet and just put him out. So, Gian Vellante, I mean, if he just lands something significant early, then Cummins is going down. That being said, Cummins does have elite wrestling ability. Cummins does have a strong pace, and he has pretty solid top control. So if Vellante cannot take Cummins out in the first round or two, then I can see Cummins getting takedowns. I can see Cummins working on Vellante. I can see Cummins getting a potential TKO as this fight goes on. Especially as Vellante starts to fade. But that being said, Vellante does have good heavy hands. He has good takedown defense overall. He has strong leg kicks. And he should be able to win this fight by knockout. especially being a New York guy. And I think the UFC is trying to set this up to, you know, have a lot of New York people get quality wins. So my pick is going to be John Volante, but I mean, live betting scenario, if, you know, he wins the first round, but expends a ton of energy, you know, maybe, you know, think about Cummins, especially if the price is right. So, but my pick will be John Volante. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division for the co-main event of the evening, we have Dennis Bermudez, who is 17-6, taking on Darren Elkins, who is 23-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Bermudez -190, the comeback in Elkins at +150. Right now, over at Five Dimes, -255 for Bermudez. Elkins is +215. So needless to say, more action coming in Bermudez's way. I get it. I mean, Elkins, talk about lack of respect. Elkins is one guy that people just kind of toss aside, and because he's just not the flashiest fighter, you know? So when they fight against, when he fights against guys that are a little bit more flashy, that have a little bit more hype and honestly overall skill set, of course people will just kind of toss him aside, another wrestler or whatever, say, Elkins isn't going to outgrind this guy. He's going to get outpointed. He's not going to have much of a chance. And a lot of times Elkins proves them wrong. I mean, look at the last fight with Bektik. Bektik was dominating that fight, but Elkins never gave up. That's the type of fighter he is. He's tough as nails, and he will fight to win until there's no time left on the clock. That's for sure. And he proved it in his last fight. Huge, huge win for him. He's on a nice little streak here, and the confidence has to be at an all-time high. So typically speaking, Elkins can win fights by outgrinding his opponents, controlling the tempo of the fight. His striking is getting a little bit better. And since he went to Alpha Male, honestly, I think it just improved his game from top to bottom. Him improved his confidence. He looks like a better fighter. So Bermudez, there's no question in my mind. I mean, if you look at it across the board, skill-wise, Bermudez has the better boxing. Bermudez is the harder hitter of the two as well. I mean, he does pack a punch. And Bermudez has the better wrestling of the two. He's got the better grappling of the two. So he's the better submission artist. He's the better striking artist in this fight as well. And his conditioning at times doesn't really let him down like some of these other guys we were talking about. But it all gets back to that big factor that we were just talking about again in the Cummins and Volante fight, that chin. Bermudez, he's only been knocked out twice officially in his career, but he's been rocked and wobbled many times. And a lot of his sub losses that he has on his resume have come by getting rocked and then submitted quickly after. So it's that chin of Bermudez that lets him down time and time again and gets him in a lot of trouble. So it's unfortunate for him that he has that type of chin, but he does. Outside of that, his chin holds up. He more than likely beats most people in this weight class. I mean, that's how good he is. And he was on a 7-fight winning streak, something like that. I don't know. He was on an extreme roll for a while that he was climbing his way to the top towards a title shot. And I mean, he was just picking off quality opponents one after the other. His chin was holding up and he was winning those fights. That's how talented this guy is. I mean, if his chin holds up, he can definitely beat most featherweights with his wrestling, with his overall ability. So matchup wise against Elkins, he should be winning this fight. But to me, there's no way I could trust that chin. Even with Elkins, he doesn't have that crazy knockout power that he really possesses. But the truth is, as I mentioned earlier, he's getting more confident on the feet. He's throwing harder punches. If you look at his fights, he's getting to the point where he thinks he can hurt people on the feet. Elkins does. He's throwing a little bit harder. He's throwing a little bit more confidently. And if you know coming into the fight that you have a guy on the other side that has a suspect chin, even if you're really not a great striker, you're going to go after that chin. So I think the entire time, if he stays upright, Elkins is going to go after that chin of Bermudez, whether it's a knee landing, whether it's an elbow landing, whatever the case may be, he's going to try to exploit that weakness in Bermudez. But the problem is, I think more times than not, Bermudez is going to mix in enough takedowns where he can take that away from Elkins and put him on his back and then just kind of grind him out or hold him up against a cage or whatnot too. So this is going to be an interesting fight and a fight that I think is a lot closer than the current odds indicate, honestly. But if Bermudez's chin holds up, he should win the fight. So that's why I have to lean his way a little bit more as a pick. There's no way I would recommend betting Bermudez at 2.5-1 over a guy like Elkins. Forget about it. Just wait. I mean, there's a lot of fights on this card, or there's more cards coming up here. You don't have to risk 2.5-1 with that chin on the line with Bermudez. So pass as far as the favorite goes, even if you like him. I think it is a dog or pass situation with Elkins. I can understand if you guys want to pass, just watch this fight though. And my pick is going to be Bermudez to win, but I'm kind of going to be pulling for this underdog for sure. I'd like to see these underdogs like Elkins that people just kind of disrespect and toss aside, get the W. So go Elkins, but my official pick, I understand, should be Bermudez.
my viewpoint on this fight is very similar to Nick's. I mean, Dennis Bermudez, he pushes a higher pace than Darren Elkins. He lands about, you know, 1.5 strikes per minute more. He is more aggressive in pursuit of his takedowns offensively. He attempts 2 more per fight. He's better in terms of getting his takedowns. He gets about 6% more accuracy with his takedowns. And then takedown defense, I mean, it's a blowout here. I mean, Bermudez stuffs almost every single takedown that's ever been thrown against him. And Elkins, on the other hand, he's a little more focused on offense than defense because he's only at 40% takedown defense, which is pretty terrible. So these guys are matched up. I really favor Dennis Bermudez. He's going to be forcing Elkins to back up repeatedly. And you got to remember, I know Elkins is, you know, getting some praise for that victory over Mirsad Bektik in his last fight, but you got to remember, he was getting the absolute crap kicked out of him in that fight before Bektik started to gas. And then, you know, Elkins was able to get a third round knockout. But, I mean, the first 2 rounds of that fight, they weren't even close. So, I mean, if Dennis Bermudez, with his conditioning, he can just put that same type of tempo and pace on Elkins and then just not let up. And I know that Bermudez does have a bad chin, but, I mean, typically he recovers very quickly when he does get rocked. And you got to remember the people that have rocked him, Jeremy Stevens, the Korean Zombie, Ricardo Lamas, those are all guys that have really good striking fundamentals and good power. And Darren Elkins does not really have either of those, even though he does have a couple knockouts to his credit. So I just, even if Elkins does land something significant on Bermudez, I think Bermudez recovers and then just gets a takedown because that's what he does best. So overall, I think Bermudez just gets in Elkins' face and probably wins a decision. I think Elkins is tough enough to hold out and basically not get finished, but Bermudez should get a pretty one-sided decision here, and I really like him to get the victory. So my pick is going to be Dennis Bermudez. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we have Chris Weidman, the former champion who is 13-3, taking on Kelvin Gastelum, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Weidman, minus 135, the comeback on Gastelum at minus 105. Right now it's Gastelum minus 160, the comeback on Weidman at plus 150. Reduced line is out on 5 dimes. That's what I'm quoting right now as well on this fight. So minus 160 Gastelum, the comeback is plus 150 on Weidman. Since I opened this line, I mean, public bettors, smart bettors, dumb bettors, every kind of bettor have been betting Gastelum. It's all Gastelum action coming in. I mean, obviously we're going to get some buyback on Weidman, especially at the price now, but it seems like Gastelum already won the fight, so we don't even have to have it play out. I mean, it's just that simple. Weidman is a fighter that's been past it for a while now. He's got no shot of winning this fight. He's done. That's what I'm hearing from everybody. And I think that we're all counting Weidman out a little bit too much. And this is a guy that's bet on Weidman. I mean, the first time he fought Anderson Silva, I had faith in Weidman. The second time I had faith in Weidman or whatever, I've been able to pick Weidman's spots pretty well throughout his career. Against Romero, I actually bet Romero against Weidman. So I've been back and forth, and I've been, again, picking the right side of Weidman fights for a while now. And you can't get them all right, of course. But I seem to have a good gauge on him, at least, I thought. So in this fight here, I'm just surprised at how much disrespect is coming in towards Weidman here and everybody favoring Gastelum. If you look at the losses that Weidman recently had, the Musasi loss, he was doing pretty well in that fight. It looked like he was starting to slow down, obviously, in that second round when the controversy struck and that the illegal knees, or were they legal, whatever. And it looked to me that, honestly, Weidman was kind of looking for a way out of that fight. It got tough. He was getting a little bit tired. And you know, when the referee gives a lot of these fighters that option, do you want to continue or not? A lot of times if you are in a tough fight and you're tired, I mean, I guess human instinct is to say, oh, no, I'm not okay or whatnot. And, you know, I don't agree with that. I don't like that factor, actually, Weidman going out like that. But he did. The Romero fight before that, he was doing really well in that fight as well. But unfortunately, that knee timed beautifully by Romero, which Romero's just a beast. We've seen that time and time again, got him out of there. So that's not necessarily a bad loss for him there. The Rockhold fight, we've seen how that played out. He was doing really well against Rockhold. I actually bet on Rockhold over Weidman in that fight as well. And so I was glad with that result, but it was pretty close. I mean, I was sweating that fight for a while until obviously Weidman made that mistake and Rockhold was able to capitalize on that as well. So is Weidman really a shot fighter? I don't know. I'm kind of scratching my head a little bit. I do understand. I've always had an issue with Weidman's cardio, to be honest with you, from the beginning. It's not like recent. You know, this isn't like Weidman's a shot fighter, now his cardio's terrible. No. In my opinion, he's always had a little bit of suspect cardio, but he's proven to me that he could fight tired, that he could fight long if needed in that Machida fight. I mean, it looked like he was gassing in that fight, and then if you look back at that fifth round, I mean, he still had plenty left in the tank, or at least he still had enough to heart and desire to drive through and do okay in that fight. So there's times where I think we underestimate Weidman's conditioning a little bit too much. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'm making the case for Weidman because nobody else really is. So that's what I'm saying here. If you look at Gaslam, he's been nothing but impressive. Of course, we all know his weight cutting issues has been a problem. That's why he moved up to 185 pounds. I don't like the move up to 185 though for him. I think he's an undersized middleweight now, even though he's made up for it with his skill, with his athleticism, with his power, with his wrestling. There's no question that he can win fights, and he's proven that. I mean, if you look at the Vitor Belfort win, that was a beautiful knockout win. The Tim Kennedy fight was a tough fight, even though Kennedy was out for like 10 years, it seems, and he bounced back. That was a very solid win for him as well. So I think he could definitely compete against some of the upper-tier guys in the middleweight division and have success, especially with the speed and his power. And again, his conditioning should be better than Weidman's in this fight as well. And so the durability factor comes into play. I think people are saying that Gaslam is a little bit more durable, and I can understand that. I mean, even times where Gaslam has been rocked, he's managed to recover fairly well and then finish off the fight and make comebacks in some of those fights. If you look at it, against Neil Magny, that was a very good example of that. He went five rounds after he was in real trouble early on in that fight. He managed to gather himself and then come away and made the fight interesting. At least he almost stole that fight back for Magny. So it was that close, but he's been in those positions before. But that was, again, that fight was at welterweight. I mean, now he's facing a real middleweight fighter in Weidman, where his size is going to come into play here. Weidman is a strong middleweight. He's going to be able to bully Gaslam around early on in this fight. There's no question about that. I think Weidman's going to be able to control the ground game early. He's going to be able to control the striking. We're all forgetting what kind of effective striker Weidman can be, what kind of power he possesses as well. I mean, I think out of the two, even though Gaslam has a little bit more speed and he can match a little bit as far as the speed and power that knockout ability that Weidman has. I mean, Gaslam has proven that as well, but I think Weidman's a hard puncher. He might not be as fast, but he could be just as effective. So I think Weidman, especially early on in the fight, is going to have success, and Gaslam might be in some trouble early on. And I think we're all underestimating the ability for Weidman to still have what it's left to beat an undersized welterweight at middleweight. So to me, it's just too much disrespect. The line got a little bit crazy. Again, everybody and their mother is betting Gaslam in this spot. So it makes me like Weidman that much more, to be honest with you. Again, and I've been against Weidman several times along the way. I just think this fight here, I do understand as it progresses, I will look. If, for example, if I take Weidman in this fight, I'm definitely going to be sweating it as it goes on. If it gets into round two, round three, round four, Gaslam should start taking over a little bit. And I will be definitely concerned along the way for sure. Because Weidman has showed us a few check marks that we have to be cautious about in those areas. But that being said, I don't think Weidman's as shot as we all think. I think Weidman knows his back's up against the wall here. He needs to perform well, and I think he's probably going to finish Gaslam. I mean, I'm going out on a limb and saying that. Not a lot of people are going to agree with it, but I think Weidman gets his fight done, and he probably gets it done within two or three rounds. So my pick is going to be Weidman pulling off the upset win over Gaslam, and I think he does it by stoppage. So not a popular opinion, and probably going to be one of the only ones on our staff picks picking Weidman, but that's the way I think you got to go, and it definitely is a dog or pass situation, especially at the current line.
I can completely understand Nick's reasoning for taking Weidman. I mean, he is going to have a massive size advantage here. I mean, Weidman's 5 inches taller. He's got 7 inches in reach, 3 inches in leg reach. I mean, it's not even going to be close in terms of physicality. But, I mean, size didn't matter in Kelvin Gastelum's UFC debut. I mean, Tim Kennedy just got in his face, landed a bunch of punches early. Gastelum took him and then just fired back the second Kennedy started to slow down. So what happens here is I think Chris Weidman definitely will be winning the early part of this fight. He should be able to get a takedown or two early. He should be able to pressure Gastelum early. But my issue is the injuries that Weidman's had. I don't think he's a shot fighter in terms of age or anything, but I mean, this guy has just had knee problems, back problems, neck problems. I mean, it's just on and on and on. And those add up. They really do. And you're seeing the result. I mean, it started when he lost his title, to Luke Rockhold, getting, you know, TKO'd. And then more recently with the Romero knockout and then the Musasi, TKO. So, I mean, it's just, Weidman's not the same guy he was when, you know, he beat Anderson Silva and then defended the title against Silva and Machida and Belfort. So what I do think that he'll start strong. I mean, he's in New York, but being in New York didn't stop him from getting knocked out in his last two fights, because those were both in New York. So, I just think, that Elvin Gastelum takes over late. I think the not having to cut as much weight is going to help Gastelum's conditioning. He's looked strong. He's had 5-round fights before now that he's been able to handle. And then I thought his conditioning was just superb in the Tim Kennedy fight. So I really like Kelvin Gastelum here. I think Weidman starts strong, but just can't keep it up because the conditioning isn't there. The explosiveness isn't there. And if he cannot finish Kelvin Gastelum, then I just don't see any way that he wins a decision. So my pick is going to be Kelvin Gastelum. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 25. Now, our premium bets will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Down Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.